Picture a 21st-floor terrace in Rio de Janeiro. A New York Times correspondent stands in dancer's pose, balancing on the edge. What began as yoga has morphed into something darker, a rehearsal for an ending that might look accidental. One night, his knee wobbles. He falls sideways onto concrete instead of plummeting to the street. The first thought that surfaces through the fog? He needs to adopt a dog. Specifically, a traumatized caramel-colored mutt he'd seen weeks earlier. Even depression's grip couldn't fully silence the part of him that understood. Responsibility for another life might be the only thing standing between him and oblivion. This is where many journeys into psychedelic therapy begin, not with curiosity or spiritual seeking, but with desperation. Despite landing what seemed like a dream job covering 5 South American countries, the journalist spiraled into paralyzing depression. Insomnia, whiskey, hollow hookups, and a growing certainty that he couldn't continue living this way. At 4 a.m. on a sleepless Christmas night, he Googled ayahuasca retreats in Brazil. What he found would crack open not just his understanding of healing, but his entire conception of consciousness itself. At Spirit Vine Center, absurd rules, vegetarian diet, sexual abstinence, abandoning blood pressure medication, tested his skepticism, but desperation won. During the first ceremony, participants lay on cots in a circle, each with a vomit bucket. After drinking the bitter brew, jungle sounds merged into the planet's beating heart. Kaleidoscopic colors dissolved his fear, bringing unexpected tears of relief. Most remarkably, Dominic, a friend who died by suicide, materialized with vivid presence. Their wordless connection felt more substantial than memory. Mourning brought embarrassment and rationality. His second ceremony delivered only nausea and disappointment. For the third ceremony, he accepted a larger dose with resignation. As ayahuasca took effect, a mysterious feminine force hijacked his thoughts. Memories flashed. Baghdad war scenes, a home invasion, coming out to his sister. Then Diego appeared, his first male love at 18 when Diego was 52. Fragments played in non-linear sequence. Gifts, compliments, shame about being seen together, their painful ending. He woke grief-stricken, desperate to comfort his heartbroken teenage self, revealing how many decisions had been driven by an unconscious quest to atone for perceived sins. Before his father's death, he revealed asking his mother to see a psychiatrist before their 1977 wedding, hoping to confirm he wasn't marrying an unsound woman. Antidepressant prescriptions found afterward sparked a quest to understand his family's mental health history. His maternal grandfather, Hernando, a brilliant civil engineer born in 1917, suffered dramatic mood swings since youth. His mania initially fueled business success in Colombia, though impulsive decisions, like relocating the family to America unprepared, led to financial ruin. After his stabilizing brother died in 1962, Hernando's condition deteriorated, leading to permanent institutionalization. His paternal grandmother, Natalia, also suffered from mental illness, spending periods at the same clinic. Her children remembered her crying almost nightly, though they had no frame of reference to recognize this wasn't normal. Scientists confirmed depression has genetic components, with studies revealing hundreds of common variants among those diagnosed. Epigenetics shows our environment and experiences alter gene expression across generations. Families must speak candidly about mental health challenges rather than burying painful histories in shame and silence. The Yawanawa tribe in the Amazon nearly vanished in the early 1980s, reduced to fewer than 100 members after disease, enslavement, and missionary suppression. Their rebellion changed everything. They resurrected plant medicine practices and launched an annual festival that became both their primary revenue source and cultural lifeline. During his 10-day stay, he witnessed practices that challenged Western norms, children as young as 8 drinking ayahuasca under tribal supervision. At Mushu Innu Village, boys entered trance states by the campfire, some smiling in rapture, others crying before finding peace. Contrary to ayahuasca's modern marketing as a healing shortcut, Painani revealed that Yawanawa spiritual leaders were historically warriors and sorcerers, not healers. His uncle took the lives of many people using plant powers. It's easier to do evil, he explained. During the final ceremony, words pierced his thoughts. You strayed from your tribe. He reflected on his loose family connections, his urge to move farther from his origins. Then, you can rebuild your tribe. Michelle Sanchez traveled to Iquitos, Peru in November 2021 to learn Combo, an Amazonian healing practice. After clearly rejecting Victor Escobar's advances, he assaulted her following their first ayahuasca ceremony. In a recorded call, Michelle states, "I told you no," and "I sincerely didn't enjoy it." Victor initially denied everything, then claimed he'd stop leading retreats, but resumed within months. The Rhythmia Life Advancement Center in Costa Rica charges $6,000 per week and guarantees a miracle to every compliant guest. Founder Jerry Powell admits the sleep deprivation is intentional. The more worn down they are, the more their ego sits down, and describes aggressive sales tactics. "We try to give you every chance to part with your money." The psychedelic renaissance's shadow reveals how vulnerability becomes exploitation, sacred medicines become commodities, and desperation breeds manipulation. Army veteran Chris Conlogue arrived at Loma Linda VA Hospital in December 2021 for a groundbreaking MDMA study. His earliest memory was his stepfather beating him and his mother with a tire iron at 18 months old. After deploying to Baghdad, where his base faced daily mortar attacks, addiction and a dishonorable discharge sent him spiraling. During his first 8-hour MDMA session, Chris experienced profound clarity, memories unfolding without judgment, viewing his life from outside himself. The second session demolished his emotional armor, revealing suppressed positive memories alongside painful ones. By his third session, he entered pure love, completely free of anger. The transformation was so complete, he quit landscaping, enrolled in college for psychology, and no longer met PTSD diagnostic criteria. Meanwhile, at Miami's Wonderland Psychedelics Conference, the trade floor buzzed with mushroom-powered gadgets and hangover cures. FDA breakthrough therapy designations for MDMA and psilocybin represent the first major psychiatric innovations since 1980s antidepressants. Yet Dr. Brian Roth's Pentagon-funded team tests psychedelic-like compounds on mice, seeking ones without hallucination markers, sanitized analogs without perceptual effects. The question lingers: would instant trauma relief without the perceptual journey undermine something essential? Growing up in Colombia during the violent drug wars of the 1980s and 90s shaped a view of all drugs as contemptible scourges. This perspective shifted dramatically through the journey with psychedelics, where respect emerged for indigenous peoples' sacred relationship with plant medicines. Ironically, the first ayahuasca experience eliminated the desire for alcohol, revealing how harmful drinking had been. Drug laws are rapidly evolving. Marijuana legalized in many states, psychedelics gaining acceptance in psychiatric treatment. Oregon and Colorado's psychedelic legalization represents a significant shift. We now have an opportunity to reconsider which substances harm versus heal. The psychedelic renaissance represents both a new frontier in mental health treatment and a profound cultural shift in understanding consciousness. As these substances move from underground spiritual practices to mainstream medicine, ancient wisdom collides with modern science, creating tremendous healing potential alongside ethical dilemmas. We stand at a crossroads where desperation meets possibility, and where our choices will determine how we understand what it means to be fully human.